Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, if you want more from us, then please do consider checking out Red Men Plus as a club legend. That is the top tier that gets you extra perks and benefits, access to our exclusive club legend Discord chat. It will also give you free merchandise every year and a whole host of bonus features. Get involved on our club legends show. You can be on a show with the cast and crew of Red Men TV every week and a whole host of extra bonus perks, as well as all the usual brilliant videos and podcasts. Go to redmenplus.com and sign up as a club legend. Eminem's 50.
Yes.
How is Eminem 50?
Wow, mad, that, isn't it?
That's insane.
I just threw that in just before we went live, and Paul just couldn't get away from it.
Bite at that, like, to me. There's been a few of them recently where, like, we've been watching Buffy again and, like, going through the ages of the people in that, and there's a lot of people in the 50s who were yeah, wild.
Hello.
Speaking of people who aren't in their 50s. Paul Mason, Steve Plunkett, Chris Pajak here with the Red Men podcast. It won't be long, you know, but...
No, I'm there. I'm a year older than Eminem.
Shit. I'm trying to be...
Tough paper, aren't you?
I thought I wouldn't have had you as that old.
No, not
when
really,
you compare
not
it really to Eminem, I'm surprised it's a year.
Well, it's just all that medication does wonders for your skin, doesn't it?
Sleeping pills, he's slept his way to you. Right, Sam, we're going to be talking about Liverpool, Manchester City, of course, because let's continue to talk about it until the point where it's a bit weird. We're going to talk about the fallout from it, about the game and the things that happened after the fact as well. A little bit later on, we're also going to be in part two talking about the Ballon d'Ors and the Paris panorama that went out last night as well, and some of the fallout from that kind of stuff. So, yeah, stick with us if you're live. Right now, watching us, whether you're on YouTube or over on Twitter or whatever, then you can come over and watch the full podcast. If you're after the fact, you're awesome. It's absolutely fine. Consume your content how you want to consume it. But strap yourself in. We're going to have a good laugh. And again, if you're on YouTube right now, use the live chat if you want to chat to us about anything as we go through it all. But we will be doing a kickoff question. I didn't prepare this particularly well, so I just wanted to ask of you guys, what's been your favourite piece of content that you've seen since the match finished, Steve Plunkett?
So there was a picture that's going around where Thiago was kicking Haaland in the nads.
The one with the face change.
And it's put Klopp's and Pep's heads on, mate. That is absolute first-class quality. That did make me laugh, mate.
Yeah. Top quality. I mean, I love the original. Yeah, yeah. So, because I remember it happening during the game and going, ooh, not enough people made enough of that as a moment. But yeah, to then change it and have Klopp with a full screaming face.
Genius, that is, isn't it?
Yeah, that was absolutely superb. Mine was, and I tweeted about this on the night, Guardiola on his knees when Alisson kicks the ball to Mo Salah, and how he just instantaneously knew that it was going to be a goal for Liverpool. I mean, there's nothing better than that. He loses his head at Anfield every season, it seems like, and it seems to be getting worse. And we were talking about this yesterday, weren't we? It's like he's got his young Padawan there, Arteta, who did it last season, who lost his head, and like he should know better. But and the other video is him there swirling his arms around.
That's my one of it, because I like Pep Guardiola, I do. You know what I mean? And I know we're meant to hate our fierce rivals. And
I think he's a good manager.
There's nothing particularly detestable about Pep Guardiola, you know what I mean? Whereas I think there have been of other managers down the years. Like when Frank Lampard comes to Anfield in the COVID season and he's giving it the biffness to Klopp, and it's like, mate, shut up and get battered, Greggs. You know, it's, whereas Pep Guardiola's like, you know, I like that he's a bit odd, and I like that he's a bit weird, and I'm sure if he was our manager, we'd have absolutely adored him too.
He'd win more European Cups if he was our manager.
Yeah, it's true.
He's so once wants to be as well, mate. Yeah, so right. wanted it, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, but I tweeted about that one where he's waving the hands. Is it's like he's gotten so used to working and managing a football club where crowds don't get whipped up into a fury, and he's like, it's a bit like I equated it to when The Rock got to pose with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania. He's always wanted to do this yeah. and get the crowd go nuts. So he's like, well, I get to do. Well, I'll do a bit of Jürgen stuff here, like, and all the cars were here, and he was like, oh, come on,
do you know the best bucket list? The best thing about that video for me is you see him, obviously, from the side. I'm talking the main stand view video, because there's a few different views, isn't there? And it's the amount of fingers. There's just loads of fingers in the air and screaming, and that's the best thing for me. That's what you want to see yeah. in a video, isn't it? Just loads of people swearing at their manager.
I had a comment on the vlog saying they were doing like an anthropological study, and they were, can you tell me what the meaning is behind the fingers being thrown up? Because this is an absolute gold mine of human behaviour that we're watching here. Because yeah, if you want to know what it's like, it's just there's something about that, like, I'm flicking the V's to someone who's 70 yards away from you, can't see yet, and would never look in your direction anyway. It's something very.
But it's the mass impact of loads and loads of V's, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I made the wanker sign more times in a football match than I've done in a very, very long time.
It's the only place I use the wanker sign in a football match. I don't use it in real life ever. Like, I just don't. But sit me near the away fans, and it's coming out all the time.
While driving, like, you're really
yeah, of course, yeah. The road rage.
I'm more of a. Not bad.
Yeah, more wait till they've gone out of line of sight and potentially a shot, and then
scream
at the mouth.
Radio.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I genuinely love it. I love the fact that his head goes. I love the fact that everyone gets so wound up, and it's great.
And you have to include the Peter Drury commentary, because that's
absolutely
in front of an exploding cop. This is Anfield. Mate, it was absolutely brilliant. Showing Martin Tyler how it's done.
sorry. I'm going to have to put a hard break on the podcast. Scott Hawks has just super chatted us $500.
What?
Wow.
Congratulations on 500K. Here's to the next 500. Fucking hell, Scott.
Jesus Christ.
That's amazing, that is.
I mean, I feel like we should... Can we change the name of this podcast to the Scott Hawks podcast? Well, I'll tell you what, we'll put Scott Hawks' name in the at the end of the title of this video, at least. I don't know how we'll shoehorn that in, but like, yeah, just get something that's slightly more... Send us a photo, Scott, we'll get it in the thumbnail or something.
Thank you, mate.
Ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. Thank you so much,
absolutely,
mate.
Absolutely ridiculous. Christ, wow. That's totally and utterly derailed me there. Like, kind of a little bit emotional there.
Mad that we got to half a million, like.
Well, it's crazy that I can never remember the exact number, but whether it was 5,000 after the first season or 10,000.
I think it was 5.
But that was what was enough for it to trigger, like, launching the website and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, the idea of half a million's mental. Right, we're going to be doing thank you so much, by the way, everyone who subscribed. Yeah, 500,000 subscribers here on YouTube. It's been a long time coming, but yeah, it's mad. Because I feel like when I talk about how long it's been, I feel like I'm like undercutting that it's a really big number and quite a big milestone, because we've been doing it for so long. But we're going to be doing a 500,000 subscriber special, recording it after this. It's going to be going out on Plus first and foremost, but I think we're going to put it out later on in the week on YouTube as well. So yeah, if you want to see us talk through our finest pips, I mean, Chris's finest moments, then we'll be doing that.
But when you say finest,
well, we'll have some finest.
Okay, but generally it's shit when we've fallen over, fucked up.
Yeah, there's a poll on Twitter right now that's still running, so if you want to vote on the top Red Men moments, then you can do that as well. Wow, yeah, absolutely unbelievable. Anyway, the Peter Drury commentary, as ever, it's like what we wait for. There's people who wait for certain things to come out. It used to be like Arsenal loss, you wait for AFTV. There's people I know wait for vlogs when, you know, you've had a big win or whatever, waiting for the Peter Drury commentary on any big Liverpool moment. And now there's the waiting for the Andy Cantwell.
He's done
it. Waiting for Andy Cantwell's
He's just so on it. It's the little facial expressions that make it, isn't it? You know, those little eyes to the side type of things, and just a roll of the eyes. He's absolutely brilliant. He must be a Liverpool fan.
He is, yeah.
We tried to get him on, but he lives in Ireland, and we don't do enough Zoom.
Have you seen the one where he's in the room with the trolling Liverpool, meeting with the other Liverpool fans, and they're all him? And they've got different hoodies and things on. That's a good watch.
Oh, cool. I only tend to watch the commentary ones, and I've seen all the commentary ones.
Very good, aren't they?
Great comment here from CFM 200 on the Thiago kick. Thiago was just trying to end the bloodline before he got that
That's a good shout, that.
Great work. Cameron Tilly has been a member for 19 months here on YouTube. Says, congratulations on 500k. Perfect game to reach it. Yeah, my word. Absolutely incredible. Right, sounds. We're going to take a very, very, very short break, and then we're going to be back talking about Liverpool Manchester City in a very short moment. Stay tuned.
Hello everyone, thanks so much for tuning in. While I've got you here for a minute, let me tell you about Red Men Plus, our amazing subscription service dedicated to all things Liverpool. Over on Red Men Plus, you will get access to the best premium content, including more podcasts that you'll enjoy. You'll get access to exclusive merch discounts, and you'll even get access to our very own Discord server and Facebook group. There's so much more to offer. To find out more, head over to www.redmenplus.com and get your subscription. Nice one, and let's get back to the show.
Yeah, if you want extra Liverpool content to get you through, we were saying last week, if you need help through difficult times, but also if you want to celebrate the joy of Liverpool, we got you covered from all angles.
The final word yesterday was absolutely epic, worth the joining fee alone. Like, it was really, really good fun.
Yeah, the final word, very much the heavy hitter on the channel, and of course, Journo Insight as well on Thursdays with Neil Jones. Amongst a whole host of other things, but also, again, if you join as a club legend, you get in the Discord chat, as we've got running right now, including the likes of Ashley Frith, Quadbod, and Scott Hawks as well, is also in the Discord. so you can join that, and of course you get entered into amazing prize draws each and every month as well. Right, Sam, let's talk about it then. I'm sure, pardon me, you're not tired of talking about it just yet, Chris.
No.
no. Liverpool 1, Manchester City 0. That felt to me like a rebirth. It felt like a rebirth on the pitch. It felt like a rebirth off the pitch. It felt like Liverpool being the Liverpool that we know and recognise. We've not seen that Liverpool this season.
No, we haven't. We put a 90-minute performance together against the best side in probably the world, didn't we? And I think the biggest thing for me is, yeah, they had more shots and more possession, but they didn't have good shots and good possession. Like, we managed that game. And I thought, for me, you know, when Liverpool changed that formation, I really think we've gone to a bit of a mid-block now. We're not doing the high press and stuff like that. We're winning the ball back in the middle of the park and a bit more in the defensive areas. And we were springing out on attack, and Manchester City just couldn't deal with it. And it was all part and parcel of the team playing absolutely brilliant, the manager being up for it. But the biggest thing for me was the stands and being in there and the noise that Anfield was making. Like, every single time we sang a song, it felt like everybody was involved. Yep. And we're so good at being the underdogs.
Yep.
And that's what Liverpool were on Sunday against Manchester City, and we embraced it and we used that to fuel the team on the pitch, and they fueled us and vice versa. It was a perfect synergy between fans and team.
I totally agree with that, and Steve, I think that's just a brilliant point, is that Liverpool gave us a brand of football to get behind again. You know, the nerves were gone because you could see a team fully committed to the cause. and again, you're right, just in terms of that noise, we do behave better in those kind of circumstances. We do, when we've got something to lose, or someone thinks they're coming to usurp us, it totally and utterly was the exact opposite of, I felt, what the attitude was online going into the game. And I know a lot of people will phrase things, people just talk in a weird way, a really negative, defeatist way at all times, pretty much, on social media. But it was not reflected in the ground feeling. There was a real feeling of defiance, and I agree with Chris, it totally powered what we were doing.
I think the city in general, Liverpool as a city, it responds to being the underdog. I think that transcends itself into the ground, and it carries on with football, and it has for many, many years in terms of being the underdog. Chris is exactly right. We put on a first 90-minute performance of the season. We won the battles that we've been crying out for them to win, you know, individual battles. James Milner won his battle with Phil Foden. Who would have predicted that on Thursday night when we thought he might play? Just a completely different performance, and Chris was also right in the way that we sprung out and shut down what they were trying to do. During the watch-along, Dan and I were amazed how many times they went back into their own half to try to recycle the ball and work it down the other side. You even ended up towards the end of the game with both De Bruyne and Rodri trying to get down the right-hand side because they were getting nothing through the middle. So it's a, hopefully it's a catalyst for many more performances like that. And it's a really strong reminder of who and what we are.
There was a real sense of calm and bravery and, you know, determination, grit and all those things, Chris. It's that's one of the things that's been lacking, is that thing of, we'll just take the ball. And look, City end up dominating possession on the day, but they had a lot of the ball just around their back four.
Possession.
Exactly.
Just possession.
Exactly. And there were plenty of times, though, where there was a couple of, just like, go on, move forward. And we went, no, it's fine. We're all right with this. We'll take the ball back. You know, we'll have it. We'll have it around the back four for a bit. We'll take the sting out of it. And it did lead to a little bit of a flattening, I think, of the game in terms of atmosphere in the middle section of the match. But it just spoke to the maturity. And again, go back to your 90-minute performance point. It was just Liverpool resetting for me. It was like going back to what made us great in the first place is be strong, be resolute. You know, you're thinking back to post-Tottenham in 2017. That was the last time we were truly awful, you know, like defensively really, really poor.
Is that the one where Lovren gets rinsed a couple of times and taken off?
Absolutely, and obviously Van Dijk comes in the January, and since then it's like we've been like, we won't concede, and then we'll make that our default position, is you're not going to get through us, and then we're going to build from there. And that's one of the things I weirdly loved about it. I'm not sure how that translates into games against West Ham and blah blah blah, but against Manchester City it was perfect.
It was, because we didn't give them the space where they wanted the space, and the space they wanted was obviously around Kevin De Bruyne, and it was around Phil Foden, and there was never anything there. Special shout out to Harvey Elliott, who worked his absolute socks off to help James.
For someone
Milner
who's been so criticised not doing the defensive
I was
stuff.
Doing the final word yesterday saying, and I've done shows over the last month saying, I just don't see Harvey Elliott as a right winger. I'm totally wrong. He's proved to me now, after that one performance, that lad can cut it anywhere he wants to on the football field right now, because he's got the drive, he's got that determination, he's got the skill set to be able to deliver on the biggest stage against the biggest people. Like, and also special shout out to Jurgen Klopp, because he put him in when it would have been so easy to just go with Nunes and keep Salah on that right hand side, but he made the decision to get Salah central after the three goals in midweek against Rangers, and he ran with it. And again, Klopp made every decision right. I went back to question probably Klopp's substitutions this season. Mm-hmm. Big call taking Elliott off and putting Carvalho on, like, you know, even in those instances.
Yeah.
Massive calls throughout the game when you've got Jordan Henderson there and everything else, and you could go a little bit tighter and everything else. He doesn't, he goes for the win, and that again, his bravery, I think, gave the lads something on the pitch.
It was something Dan Kerrett was tweeting about. Always a great follow. If you don't already follow Dan Kennett, you should do. But it's about where in that system the energy is required in those wide midfield roles. And putting Harvey Elliott in there, yet he's not like electric in terms of pace, and neither's Jota, but they're full
his
of energy.
His job wasn't going behind.
Yeah, exactly. They're full of commitment, and they're full of pressing, and they're actually full of guile when they're on the ball as well. And that was one of the things where, to Chris's point, when Carvalho comes in, he's actually brilliant as well, because he just picks up with it. His job is to go and get in people's faces, and yet he's got to get back in and all that kind of stuff as well. Like, but yeah, it's like everyone understood what they were doing, and that's part of the problem I had with changing formations today the fine margins lost. It felt like we managed to figure it out at the last possible best moment, you know, against the hardest opponents. We managed to sort of
cover. Elliot's learning when to cover the space, when to come inside, when to go outside, when to drop off. What he's really good is he can take the ball in on the half turn.
Yes.
And I've been saying for weeks now, he's brilliant when he brings the ball. His first option is to look forward, and we don't have enough of that. And it kind of makes me understand a little bit more what he tried to do against Everton by having one on the left and one on the right. And it didn't work on the day, but that was the thinking. For a lad of his age, that was a really mature performance by Elliott. He was pretty much didn't put a foot wrong, and his defensive work is improving all the time.
He enjoyed the challenge against Foden as well, I think, when he had to get back and get stuck in. We were talking about it walking back to the car, Chris. There's a moment very early on when he's basically in the right back position, and he worms between two guys and gets his head up and plays the ball out. And that was like that was one of the moments that you can hang your hat on in a game and go, all right, we're on it today. Mm. You know, he should be our weak link in this, because, well, him at that right hand side should have been a big weak link for us in general. You know, we'll talk about Milner in a second and Gomez and that, but Harvey Elliott is going up against Phil Foden, who's being held up as this wonder child, the future of English football. And Harvey Elliott's got years between them yet, of course, but to go up and face that test and then show you what you can do, it was when Harvey Elliott can do that, that helps raise the bar to everyone else as well, because there's this kid And if he's prepared to be that brave, go ahead.
Absolutely. But the biggest thing for me on the win is that we didn't leave ourselves open at the back, and that was to do with where we pressed. Like, if we were high pressing, it wasn't working like we were earlier in the season, you leave that space in front of the centre halves. Mm-hmm. But we didn't do that, you know. And again, massive call by Jürgen to put Fabinho in there and leave the captain off the field, by the way. And Fabinho stepped up and played his best game of the season by a country mile. Mm-hmm. So him and Thiago marshalled the middle of the park. Now, one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that we just sort of didn't let Manchester City play their game in any way, shape or form, did we? And you know, Harvey Elliott was a big part of that. I've kind of lost myself thought here, to be perfectly honest with you. I had a point, and I've forgotten where I'm going with
it. What I really liked about it was, in terms of those
performances, though, is that, again, Liverpool made themselves solid and made themselves resolute, and it put all the pressure on Man City. And I honestly, I've not had a chance to say this anywhere.
Oh, the lemon, by the way.
but I think City have made themselves a little one-dimensional with Erling Haaland.
Yeah, a few people have said this to me,
Not overly so, because obviously you've still got Kevin De Bruyne, Haaland and Foden, who are all capable of dropping a moment of magic and winning the game for you. And look, on another day, Haaland might come away with a couple of goals there. Not the disallowed one, because it was quite clearly disallowed and should have been. But, like, pardon me, with the Phil Foden stuff, we met Harvey Elliott again, mastered him really well. Milner had an absolutely brilliant game down at right back. And again, we just said, well, look, we kind of know what you're going to do. It's Kevin, you're going to give it to Kevin De Bruyne, and yes, he's going to try and find pockets of space to pick his pass from, and that's unpredictable. But we kind of trusted our centre halves a little bit and said, well, you know what they're going to do? They're going to look to his head. So, you know,
just be in the passing lane,
defend them. I know it's hard to defend them, but your boss defenders. And it goes back to the conversation. Gomez was brilliant, Milner was brilliant, Harvey Elliott was brilliant, everyone was brilliant, by the way, but they were the ones who really stood out for me because they were the ones, Steve, who people would have been looking at and going, particularly the Milner stuff.
Yeah.
I find the James Milner criticism so tiresome.
Yeah,
because nobody here is going to sit here and say James Milner should be starting 15, 20, 30, 40, you know what I mean? He's not a first choice, first nailed on in any position for Liverpool. Mm. But the reason he's at Liverpool is that he can come into any game of football and put a performance like that in. That's why he's there. And if he wasn't, it's nothing to do with Liverpool's budget, and it's nothing to do with, like, favouritism or loyalty to a fault. It's what it's called, having a squad.
Yeah.
You've either got a 36-year-old James Milner, or you've got an untried child. That's how you fill that part of a squad out. And James Milner showed exactly why he's a Liverpool player.
Well, it's the know-how, isn't it? It's how to manage your game. He was very disciplined in his performance. You didn't see him making gung-ho runs and leaving pockets of space in behind for Foden to play in. He just comes on and does whatever's asked of him. You know, it's 800 games or something, isn't it, he's played in his career. You amass so much knowledge of the game, how to play certain situations. I wanted him to be man of the match, personally speaking, because, like you say, Paul, he's 36 years old. He probably shouldn't be starting games of that magnitude. But when he does, it's okay. We trust him to do it. That was as good a right-back performance as you see anywhere this season from a guy that ostensibly is a centre midfielder.
Yeah. And he's... Obviously, he's got his 800 games. He played with that experience, didn't he? And that was one of my big criticisms for this season, that the experienced players are not using their experience in-game. But we had the spine of the team in this one, and the spine of the team worked well, and shockingly enough, we put our best performance in. When you go Alisson, when you go the two centre-halves, and you throw Fabinho in there and Mo Salah up top, that's the first game where I think our spine has truly been absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Van Dijk was being really aggressive in the challenge for once, rather than passive, like going and finding the ball, going and finding the challenge, which sprung us out to play a ball to Harvey Elliott, to Fabinho, to Mo Salah for that first one where we should have won the corner. That's brilliant, you know. And then you've got James Milner on that right hand side, who, let's not forget, is probably our fourth choice right back. This is the other thing that people are forgetting here. I mean, you right now this season, Joe Gomez has played right back over James Milner, so he's ahead of him in the pecking order. Trent Alexander-Arnold, and I think probably Ramsey, had he been fit, would have been our third choice right back. So to get that performance out of your fourth choice right back says a lot as well,
alongside our fourth choice centre half in Joe Gomez in there as well. And as I said, Harvey Elliott playing effectively in a new position ahead of them. It's so commendable from the Milner stuff. I especially love because he's just been like held up as all these people who are like Liverpool spend. And I'm not getting drawn into the wider things that we'd all love Liverpool to spend bottomless amounts of money. But though Klopp's point was brilliant, I thought it just an aside. I thought he totally cut the legs off all the let's criticize the structures of football club stuff this week by saying, you know, if you want to support a football club that's got bottomless resources, there's three in the world you can go and do, and you'll get to watch your team buy everyone at any costs at all times. That's not who we are. And I thought that was a real, that was an additional win there, because there's lots of people who play Footy Manager and play FIFA and you do your career modes, and they're the lads that you get rid of, because why wouldn't you? Because you would, you can technically upgrade Milner and you can upgrade Gomez and you can get someone faster than Harvey Elliott if you wanted to and all them things. But football in the real world is played with more than measurable stats on computer games. It was a huge, huge win for those lads. The Gomez stuff, we've got a track record of this where a lad has a bad game and he's automatically written off.
It was a bad game. It was a really bad game against Napoli.
Napoli was one of those games. You could chart Gomez's four in that game.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
And he was brilliant until the point where he wasn't. And he was fighting against himself. And he lost that psychological battle with himself.
100%.
And his performance absolutely died on its arse. He's kind of come back. He's put solid performances in at fullback. But then to go, you know, Klopp made that decision, and that was one of the Chris's talk about some big decisions
that was made. It was.
You know, we could have put
so many people wanted Fabinho to play centre half. So many people I spoke to.
You were saying Fabinho right back, put Fabinho right back. Those people I was saying Gomez
centre half, put Fabinho right back. Yeah. No, wrong. Yeah. Fucking Fabinho deserved to be in the middle of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Gomez stood up to that challenge in an absolute brilliant way. You know, look, he's not perfect, and he does need a run of games often to get himself up to form, but he's the best centre half I think England have got by an absolute mile.
If he's fit and he's playing like that, he goes to the World Cup and he starts. I don't think you could argue that. That was a reminder of the Gomez that played alongside Van Dijk when we won the title.
Yes.
And we shouldn't have been worried about that combination for that reason. He's got the things you want. He's got pace. He's got strength. Sometimes his concentration isn't perhaps where he'd like it to be. But on Sunday, he got everything right. And, you know, as much as I wanted James Milner to be man of the match, I was okay with it going to Joe Gomez.
I think it's aided by Van Dijk's performance, Chris, where you're right, he was more, you're both saying he's more aggressive, because I think Virgil's done his own head in a game this season by maybe that believing that whole, you know, the dribble pass stats and all this. He hasn't had to work for so long.
He doesn't engage. He stopped engaging. And the thing is, when you're playing football at that level, you know, somebody who hasn't played football at that level talking right now, you've still got to surprise teams. Klopp always spoke about it with the press. They know the press is coming, so you've got to surprise them where the press is coming from, which is why sometimes Fabinho used to jump out instead of Jordan Henderson or Thiago when they're in front of them, because they wouldn't be expecting the six to jump out to them. It was very, very difficult for strikers when they didn't think he was going to, when he thought he was going to engage and he didn't. It put them in the headlights. They didn't know what to do. Now they all know he's going to back off.
Yeah.
So they go, well, I know he's going to back off, so I'm going to shift it and shoot.
Goes back to
now he's got in their heads again, and they don't know whether he's going to stand off or he's going to engage them. Yeah. And as soon as they've got that unpredictability in the challenge, that's when the striker's scared and doesn't know what to do.
And this goes back to the wider rebirth point about Liverpool, is that people have come to understand what Liverpool are and how they do things. We've climbed the mountain and we were on top, and there's a different way of playing when you get on top to the climb. You don't have to fight as much, and you build this aura up around you. Liverpool have been far too passive this season, or then trying to engage. I always talk about it, it's like how Evertonians get in the heads of their like scout midfielders, no, tough dogs of war, and it's like, no, he's not that type of player.
He's a technical player.
Exactly. And Liverpool have kind of had a bit of this thing where they go, oh, how do we tackle? Is it like this? No, it's not. It's not like that. They've had to re-remember how to play that way. But when Van Dijk is fighting in a football match, I think it's Gomez's issue sometimes is a little bit, you know, when you play with someone who's so good that they make it look effortless, you almost try to replicate it yourself. Mm. But if you're not that good, you actually do need to put the graft in. You do need to throw your body in. And when you've got Virgil van Dijk shutting crosses down by sliding full length in to block them, that sets a tone for everyone there. Well, we're getting our shorts dirty today, lads. Every one of us is getting our shorts dirty, and it set the bar big time. We talked about Pep being a weirdo already. I'll gloss over that a little bit, although I find it hilarious how weird he is. Yeah, he's great. Love him. He's just a fascinating creature.
He even comes across like, doesn't he, when he does the handshake at the end, it's almost with the fingers in the manager's face. Like he hates it. Losing. And I respect that as someone who absolutely hates losing.
Can't stop it.
I mean, to be fair, if you're on a City show doing something like this, they've probably got Klopp's a weirdo on their thing because that's what makes them who they are.
There's not enough of them to do a podcast with multiple people on.
Well, there you go. They might manage three.
There's three people. But they don't speak to each other, so like there's three separate channels. Maybe you put them all side by side, they might be able
to. But they're not so different, are they, really, in their quirks and mannerisms? Are not really, are they?
No. I want to talk about the Klopp sending off because I think it's important. Jürgen Klopp should not be doing that to the assistant referee. And people might disagree with me on this, so I don't, people can have their own opinions on it. I know we blindly support the manager, and you know, we should. We always get behind Jürgen Klopp, and we're right too. He's the Liverpool boss, and he's brilliant, and I love Jürgen Klopp, I adore him. But he was bang out of order the way he ran up to that line. And I watched at the time. It's funny, I didn't capture the moment, but I did go fucking hell, Jürgen. Just came out because it's very aggressive how he goes for the assistant referee. I don't think it sets a good example, and I know he's kind of been cleansed. You know, the officials get the decision wrong.
He's owned it though. That, which is a good thing.
He has. You know, he said it's right to be sent off, but he also has caveated it with the decisions and all this kind of stuff.
For me, he did enough there because he said, look, I shouldn't have done it, and, you know, I was wrong. Yeah. That's all you can do in that situation. Mm. You can't take it back.
Yeah.
You can either double down on it. You can still be pissed off about the decisions because the decisions were still wrong.
Yeah.
But at least he's owned it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there's something, and I don't know whether he'll do anything more around that, but I thought it's interesting. I've seen a couple of different takes, the cooler takes after the fact, where it doesn't help the wider game when, and look, him getting sent off actually is a good thing. He should be sent off for what he's done, and you're right. And it's good that he recognises he should be sent off. But, like, the, you know, referees and assistants, I mean, you've got to be an odd character anyway to want to be one of them anyway, but it doesn't help because it sets an example for people down the pyramids and, you know, in grassroots, that they get a ton of, well, more abuse, you know, at those kind of levels anyway. So I think it's a bit, I don't like it. It doesn't make me feel very good seeing the manager do that. But to kind of tread on all my own points, it's one of the most blatant fouls I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh yeah.
Bernardo Silva. And worse, and no one in the media's talked about this. He then goes back for a little kick after the fact.
Throws
a little elbow in. It's like, where's the retrospective action on all this? He should be getting a ban for that kind of stuff because you get sent off for that. You know what I mean? If the referee sees that, it's the little kickback afterwards, you get sent off for it. The whole thing's
The problem there is Klopp has stolen that moment and made it what it is by his reaction.
Yeah.
So straight away, your train of thought goes from, there's a bit of afters there, can we have a look at that, to, my God, what's he up to?
Yeah.
You can't do that as a manager.
Yeah.
And you're quite right to reference the pyramid type thing, grassroots football, because in recent weeks there's been a referee who's been quite badly assaulted. And you hear stories of kids on a Sunday going and replicating what they see on the TV. It's not great. But it was kind of in keeping with the passionate nature and the intensity within the game. He was like a caged tiger throughout the whole game in that he was really fired up, really into the game. It's not great, and it has to be admonished, and he has to come out, and something has to be done. I think he's got a one-game ban, and there's people calling for more than that. But in world football, he's such a pivotal figure that people look to as a role model and someone you should aspire to be. And that's not really... I'm pretty sure he's quite disappointed with himself because... 6'4", he's a big guy, and he often berates officials. That was probably the worst we've seen him do it so far. And you're right, Paul. It's not a good look, is it? It's a deserved red card.
On the decision making stuff, you're right. I mean, that's the problem because it potentially takes away the focus from, you might actually get something out of there. But the refereeing was mad because I've seen a couple of different takes from pundits or whatever, Chris, kind of praising Anthony Taylor for letting the game go and all this kind of stuff. and I think I said this on the fan cam. He let it go for both teams largely throughout the game, but it was just that string of just stupid decisions. It's not giving Mo Salah, the fact that Mo Salah just doesn't get free, because there's one on the left side of the penalty area early on in the game where he just gets his legs taken from under him. It's the Edison makes the save, and it's a corner,
yeah,
not a goal kick. The fact that he has to be pulled back by VAR to have the goal ultimately overturned, it left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth, regardless of the result.
It always does with him. It always seems to, anyway, doesn't it? And it's not just him. Like, I still think he's actually one of the best of a bad bunch, which is really concerning. That's the biggest issue, is that he is actually one of the two probably best referees. He just happens to be a monk. He shouldn't be refereeing any of our contests ever, should he? Yeah. You know, was it Mike Dean that was never allowed to... Was he was never allowed to referee for us.
I can't remember them, but he's from... Yeah, he's a Tranmere fan, isn't he, Mike Dean? I'm pretty sure we've had Mike Dean referees, but yeah. there have been examples of that. I might be totally wrong on that.
So, and then it's those, you know, first of all, we obviously get the corner. Second of all, there's the foul on Fabinho from Haaland. Thirdly, of course, Haaland on Alisson Becker. And it was all of those things. And I was really scared at the time, and I said this to you after the game, Paul, is that... when he went over to the screen, I just haven't seen referees go over to the screen. So I was a bit like, oh shit, he's having a look and he's probably just going to stick with the decision on the field, because this season I just don't see referees going to the field. I just see the VAR and then it's...
The rule of thumb this season has been, if they go to the screen, 99 times out of 100, it's overturned.
That's what I said to Danny to watch along.
There was one not too long ago that didn't get overturned, but... So when he went to the screen, my only concern was we were chanting "you mank bastard" at him, and I was like, "Oh God, don't, like, let's just wind that in a little bit." Like, yeah,
wise, wasn't it?
Yeah. But you've seen people come out, and this is the problem with it all, isn't it? It's the whataboutery in football. Like, you know, I've seen people talking about the Jurgen Klopp sending off, and then showcasing videos of Pep shouting at the referees. He walks past them. You know, you've seen this, and then there's something else. There's that. You know, it's the vile chants from Manchester City fans. It's the coins being thrown from Liverpool. Where does it ever end? Just get on with the fucking game, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Well, tribalism plays a big part in that. Really does. Just briefly, Salah, absolutely magnificent. Great to see him back to his absolute peak of his powers. I want to talk, because you mentioned it, coins, chants, graffiti, xenophobia and coach attacks. So where we're careful with the whataboutery of it all, as you say, Chris, is coins were thrown at Pep Guardiola. Fine. If you're throwing coins at people on the pitch, you get banned. It is what it is. You're banned, and you shouldn't be allowed to come into football matches. You made a stupid decision. You're probably looking at a ban.
It's a cash stadium.
Yeah.
What are you doing with them? You've literally just taken them in.
Four-five style, whip your bank cards on them if you're going to do it. I did fully appreciate it, but probably the best piece of post-match content was Ian Doyle's tweet saying about the coins being thrown. The first time Pep's got annoyed at having money thrown at him. Brilliant post-match comedy, stupid thing to do inside a football ground. And that's where people take it all a bit too far and a bit too seriously. Yeah, at all. I mean, mercifully, just from my own personal experience, being the other end of the ground, I didn't really hear anything of the City fans, nothing. So I didn't hear. But they were doing the murderers. They were doing, obviously, and there was, what's the other one? Anyway, Hillsborough Heysel chants and stuff. They were then putting graffiti on the toilet doors and all that about Hillsborough and about Heysel and all that kind of stuff after the fact. And then City apparently said that their coach was attacked on the way out.
But there's no evidence.
Well, apparently that's still in the process. Yeah. Of being
the fact that City haven't put a statement out about the chance is still baffling to me.
So I've just got this. Paul Gore's tweeted this, a statement from Merseyside Police. So we confirm we are working closely with Liverpool and Man City football clubs to understand a number of reported incidents that took place at the match. Been aware that offensive and disorderly behaviour had taken place, including allegations of coin throw and offensive graffiti sprayed in the away section. Been aware of allegations of the City team coaches damage. No incidents have been reported to us or that items were thrown at the coaches, and we are now working with Man City to establish the circumstances of what happened and the allegations that damage was caused. Behaviour will not be tolerated, etc, etc. So Don King's done a really good sort of thought piece on this in Daily Mail Sport. Obviously, no one else, stay clear of the Daily Mail, but the Sport part's not too bad, and Dom's a good writer. But what the City brief, City have not come out directly and spoken about this, but they briefed to the MEN and to JNOs that they felt that Jurgen Klopp talking about the financial gap between football teams riled up the Man City fans, and it was borderline xenophobia.
So they haven't come out and said it. They've leaked this information to a Times journalist, wasn't it? madness, to be honest with you. If you believe in something, go up and fucking say it for a start. Yeah. You don't have to do it down the back door. I don't understand how Manchester City can be so forthright with their opinion that it was borderline xenophobic when the clubs were never mentioned. So I think most people would be assuming Newcastle were in there. But like he talked
will
about
he
it in
will
the
he
mentioned world,
that Newcastle have got no Newcastle. It was the, I think the question was asked about Newcastle, and he said like
Newcastle got no ceiling. Yeah. But he also it was a different part of it, wasn't it? Where he said there's three clubs in the world, PSG. Did he mention PSG by name?
Well, I think I don't think the original question was like, how do you compete with City?
Yeah,
and so it came about. It's unfair, isn't it? You know, to the point. But again, it's pure deflectionary tactics.
Xenophobia is people from different places, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we're talking about the Gulf States as one whole place right now for it to be xenophobic. Hmm. Is that right?
I would guess so. Yeah,
because they're all from different areas of the Gulf, aren't they? The owners of those.
Bullshit is what it is. Yeah, and again, it's pure deflectionary tactics. And again, it's what people are talking about. More people are talking about that than talking about incidents that happened in and around the match. And more people are talking about that once again than Hillsborough Slayers. You know, again,
so is what Manchester City is saying, just so I can get this right in my head, Manchester City is saying that Klopp riled the English Manchester people into singing murderers with comments about the Gulf States.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what we're saying here?
Suggestion of that, yeah.
Yeah, and then they've tagged on the borderline xenophobia stretch thing at the end. Yeah, without a doubt. It's balmy. And apparently, so again, I've got a couple of quotes from the Don King thing. I'll just find them. But it's Liverpool are apparently like looking into legal action over it because that's an actual slit, and that's why City have done it through the back channels, because there'll be deniability there. They'll claim that it was misinterpreted, or there won't be a straight source for it. It'll have been a conversation. Again, it'd be a phone conversation, not an email, because they've probably learned that lesson by now. In fact, I think it said, just to get the quote initially where it came from, so Jurgen Klopp was asked, don't put this on screen because there's fucking adverts all over it, it's a nightmare of a website, when you signed your new contract in April, you said City wouldn't stop developing, what do you do to keep pace? And Klopp had said, you won't like the answer, nobody can compete with City in that you have the best team in the world and you put the best striker in on the market, no matter what it costs, you just do it. I know City will not like it, nobody will like it, you've asked the question but you know the answer. What does Liverpool do? We kind of act like them. It's not possible. There are three clubs in world football who can do what they want financially. It's legal and everything fine, but they can do what they want. We have to look at it and say, we need that, and we have to look here and make it younger and here a prospect, and you try to compete with them. It's not a problem for me. It's like it is. Now at Newcastle, somebody, and he was talking about the sporting director, Dan Ashworth, said there is no ceiling at this club. Yes, he's right. He's absolutely right. There's no ceiling for Newcastle. Congratulations, but some other clubs have ceilings.
It's not necessarily that he's talking about Newcastle in the first part of that. Newcastle's mentioned after he starts. It could be Barcelona. No matter how much in debt they get, they still have all the money in the world.
This has all the hallmarks of someone when someone gets called out for being a bell end and goes, oh, you're not saying it's because I'm a bell end, because I couldn't possibly be a bell end. It must be because of something else. So it might make race, religion, or whatever, and it's like sometimes you're just the bell end. And his comments are about money, you know what I mean? Ultimately, and look, if people want to read it, it feels a little bit like Man City doth protest too much. It's like, you know, they feel that way, or they're on the defensive because of that kind of thing. The whole thing's stupid, and I do hope more comes of it, because, like, again, hope this band's.
I bet your Klopp is seething.
Yes. People who throw
He'll
coins
be driving
should be banned.
This conversation from Liverpool point of view.
People who've thrown coins should be banned. People who are chanting about Hillsborough and Mayors and all that kind of stuff. Now, no place in football. Man City, what's it got to do with them? It's, you know,
12
what I mean?
Minutes into the game as well.
Mate, it's just like, it's fucking stupid. I saw some of them doing like the wall pushing gestures and stuff as well, which they've obviously learned from Evertonians, because that's a very Everton thing. Coach attacks. I don't know how bad that was. I always go back to it. The coach treatment in 2018 went too far. The vast majority of stuff that got thrown at the coach was a load of like cardboard tubes from the smoke bombs and all that kind of stuff. And then clearly some idiots went too far and threw bottles and windows got smashed. It's too much. too much. There's no fucking need for it. It does set a precedent, and it does mean it does open the door for more idiots to think that that's a thing. Because again, we're kind of having a bit of a laugh with it. We've done like the whole "stop crying your heart out" and the Copperberg bottles, and we've kind of laughed the whole thing off. Probably need to be careful with that, because that then makes it like we're going to do it again. Don't do it again. It was a thing that was blown out of proportion. It went too far, and then it was blown even more out of proportion off the back of it. Like, but yeah, the whole thing, the xenophobia things, was just like, oh wow. Someone's taken it to that degree. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Right, we're going to take a slight detour from the footy for a moment. We are sponsored this week by Who Knows Wins, which is a fantastic app. You can go to redmen.whoknowswins.com to play along every week. Basically, it's very, very simple. If you ever play, if you ever do an accumulator where you might bet on 10 outcomes of football matches, and you can well know that if you get one wrong, then that's your acha scuppered. What you can do with Who Knows Wins is that you get to predict 10 outcomes of football matches, but it's effectively...
Predict. All right.
Guess.
Guess.
It's then put into a league table, so everyone who enters, and you've got a pot of dough that's up for grabs at the end, but you can basically win money without having to get all 10 absolutely perfect. So last week, the winner won 2.5K, 8 out of 9 on the game day special versus City. 6 players shared the spoils in the Sunday pick 10 to win £540 each. Chris got 6, Steve got 6, and I got 5 out of the pick 10 this week. Me and Chris got 2, and Steve got 1 out of the game day one, which was the Man City specific one.
Well, I knew me and you would beat Steve on that one, because he was very heavily City.
Steve was in a really bad place last week, wasn't he? Very much needed. It's good.
He's in a very good place this week. It's called Florida.
Yeah, he's in Florida. Hopefully he comes back a man reborn. I kind of hope he missed the game, to be honest, because he didn't deserve to watch game, given how much his attitude stunk in the build up to that one.
Yeah, prick.
Yeah.
Nice thing. We miss you.
No,
we genuinely do.
No, we don't. There's two leagues up and running on Who Knows Wins this week. We can get the app up now on the iPad, I believe. There's a couple of different options. There is a pick 10 for the Saturday games. There's also a special one for West Ham this week as well. The pick 10 starts with Liverpool Forest, which is obviously the early kickoff. Chris will be going through his picks right now. So effectively, you've got Liverpool versus Nottingham Forest versus Liverpool. You can pick Forest to win, it to be a draw, or Liverpool to win. Chris, I feel like, have you put much thought into these picks?
I have decided that I'd like Crystal Palace to win, so I've gone for them. I'd like Brighton to draw. With them, but I'm going to... Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
You're going to put Man City to win over Brighton. You're going to go Norwich to beat Sheffield
United. Yeah, because it's in yellow and Norwich are in yellow.
Sunderland-Burnley?
That sounds like a poor draw, doesn't it?
Chelsea-Man United? win for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Fiorentina Inter Internazionale.
And I just think that for the Chelsea United one is, I think United have just been squirming through games in the gym with the feet.
I think United are going to win that because Potter hasn't lost yet since he's been, and he's due a little bit of a slip up, and that's kind of how those games go, I think. But yeah, it's as simple as that, really. So yeah, go to redmen.whoknowswins.com, or you can scan the QR code if you're on YouTube right now and take you straight there. And you can sign up, and then yeah, you can play with that as well. Obviously, there is an element of gambling involved, so do be gamble aware. Make sure you're 18 plus as well to be involved. We'll put a link in the description underneath. Keep an eye on our socials later this week. We'll put the rest of our picks in there as well. But yeah, do keep an eye out. There is one for West Ham tonight, which is more like over X corners, over X shots, that kind of stuff, more individually game specific. We can just quickly run through what the fixtures are more clearly for the pick 10 league this week, if we've got that side. So yeah, Forest, Liverpool, Everton, Palace, Man City, Brighton, Chelsea, Man United, Sheffield United, Norwich, Sunderland, Burnley, Borussia Dortmund, Stuttgart, Hoffenheim, Bayern Munich, Fiorentina, Inter Milan, and Real Madrid versus Sevilla. So if you think you know how all those are going to go down, there's a minimum of a 10k pot up for grabs for that one.
It's mine.
It's not though, is it?
Oh.
Right, okay. Let's move things on then. Let's talk about the Ballon d'Or awards, which seemed to go on for 42 hours. Last night I kept checking Twitter and it's like, and the 25th player has been revealed and the 24th. And then and then I look back, it must be done by now. No, still going. Still going.
I looked at, and I was watching the BBC Sport like update, and I was like, when's this on? And how can you watch it? And the programme ended at like 9:15. This was like 4:30, and I was like, yeah, not going to watch that.
No.
It's not an all-day thing, is it, really? Like, it's bad enough. I know it's different. It's a different thing, Ballon d'Or to UEFA and stuff, but it's bad enough just doing the fucking, like, best awards and all that type of stuff during the draws and stuff. Like, to drag something out like that for 6 hours. I mean, poor Karen Benzema, when he picks his frigging trophy up, they're all asleep in the room.
Yeah.
Like, they're all done.
There is that. That's always the worst thing you can ever have at an awards ceremony, is to be the last award of the night.
Yeah.
Because the applause is done by then. Everyone's enthusiasm has waned and everyone's either pissed or disinterested. So you want to get your awards nice and early. But this was like football blogging awards over the years. It's like, if you know it's after the midway point, no one's paying attention by that point. So it's you want to get it out early.
And you can get drunk afterwards. Like, if Benzema got his at 4:00, he's there on the aisle, isn't he, until like 4:15 when he's got to stop and go to bed.
Just in terms of how Liverpool did, so Darwin Nunez came joint 25th, which is very good. Trent joint 22nd.
I'm not having that it should be given to the team he played for. You know, like, Sadio Mane comes second, didn't he? But it's down at Bayern Munich on the Ballon d'Or. I'm like, no, hang on a minute. Like, that's not right. And Diaz, yeah, that's a bit of us, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Darwin Nunez, it should be down for his old club.
Yeah, definitely. But of our current players, this is where they finished. Luis Diaz equal 17th. Virgil came 16th. Fabinho equal 14th. And Mo Salah was our highest ranked current player in 5th. And as mentioned, yes, Sadio Mane comes second. City won Club of the Season.
No one knows why. I didn't know that you could buy Club of the Season.
I honestly didn't know it was up for grabs. Yeah, I didn't know it was on sale.
No,
I mean, it's the point made. Real Madrid won the Champions League.
Yeah,
and Liverpool played every game of football you could possibly. And I agree. Look, we didn't have that, and we talk about this for Ballon d'Ors. You need those highlight moments.
Yeah,
I think, look, if Liverpool win the European Cup at the end, they undoubtedly win that award. But it's City just won the domestic league, like. They do that all the time. You know what I mean?
And it wasn't even close, won it?
Yeah. It's close. Really, really close one thing. Weird.
There's no way that wasn't all bought and paid for.
Yeah. Allison came second.
They bought like a double page spread in the magazine for the next 6 years.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. To sort of bring us towards a close on the podcast, obviously BBC's Panorama documentary into the Paris Champions League final went out last night. I've not watched it. I know a lot of people did, and a lot of people talk about it being essential viewing, and I'm certain. I have this with Hillsborough stuff as well, where I watch it all, but I have to watch it in my own time and own pace. Yeah, you did watch it, Chris.
Yeah, I did. I found it quite difficult to watch, to be honest with you. Did you watch
it? I haven't watched it. I share Paul's sentiment. I was at a age with Hillsborough really hit hard, and I have difficulty in catching up on those things. There's some stuff on terrestrial TV in recent months that's been around that, and I can't watch it. So at some point, I'll probably attempt to watch it, but I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Yeah, I think I'm quite lucky. Like, I've got a terrible memory of things, so I can generally forget stuff quite easily and then go into it. Like, I haven't really been able to shake the Parish stuff, to be perfectly honest with you, in quite the same way. Like, you know, when we went to Everton the other week, it brought it all back, just going to Everton and stuff, and watching it I found really difficult. Now, by comparison to what a lot of people went through, I had it very, very easy, don't get me wrong, but it was still not a nice situation to find yourself in. I don't want to sound like I'm blowing my own horn here. I'm not at all, but I am quite empathetic to other people's situations. Mm. And when I see kids fucking crying and screaming and getting crushed, it really, really gets to me nowadays. And it never used to. 15, 20 years ago, I just couldn't put myself in the other person's situation. Now I do all the time, and I find it quite difficult. And I tell you what, I mean, Dan Austin, we know how much he's done for this city and our fan base over the course of the last few months. But Jason McAteer crying, like, it was making me fucking well up and, like, bringing a tear to my eye and stuff. I can feel myself getting emotional just talking about it now and watching what he kind of went through, and because the helplessness of being live on TV, watching it all unfold, I was like, oh my God, I'd never really put myself into his situation. And his wife got bloody mugged, and, like, she was talking about she thought she was going to get raped and all this type of stuff, and I'm just like, oh my God. And, like, I just couldn't believe the stuff that, even having watched all the content when it first came out, because I was trying to get an understanding of what was going on, there were still stories that I've not heard coming out of this, and videos that I'd not seen, and I found it really difficult to watch. But I'm glad that I did. I thought Layla did a fantastic job putting the programme together, and everybody who was involved did an incredible job of being able to articulate what happened on that day and show the country, if not the world, exactly what Liverpool fans were forced to go through, because this isn't a Liverpool fan thing. This would have happened to any team who played in that game. And just like Hillsborough, in that regards, we're fighting for football fans here, not Liverpool fans.
The problem is that this is the stain of Hillsborough carries with Liverpool, and Heysel as well. You know, people. You know, when fans are so insensitive, it goes back to the stuff from part one. When fans continue to bring it up, and you still see it, there's like this justice for, you know, the 39 and all that kind of stuff, and it's like, well, there was, you know, people were prosecuted for that kind of stuff. But it's the thing that carries with Liverpool now, and it's the thing that, you know, and moreover, the lies around Hillsborough and what that propagated was a reputation around Liverpool, and a false reputation that Liverpool were going to go on the continent and cause problems. And so that ends up being factored into things. People don't look at the humanity in the situation, and some of those old slurs die hard, you know.
The fact that the South Yorkshire Police, there was a video clip in the Panorama programme of the South Yorkshire Police blaming the late arrival of fans for Hillsborough, and a clip from the Senate in France of almost verbatim the French authorities saying exactly the same thing. I mean, it's just the Hillsborough playbook.
Yeah.
It's just what we've seen before. We've seen them try to brush us aside, and it's absolutely disgusting that it's able to still happen.
The thing that's most encouraging, this is not taken like a Jimmy McGovern drama piece as being the only thing that's come out in Liverpool's favour, you know, years after the fact, you know, like news outlets. It was the amount of journalists caught up into the digital age, the social age, that it wasn't possible to...
We owe them a debt of gratitude. You know, I really, really apologise. I can't remember the Daily Mail sports writer who was on the scene. Like, the English journalist did a fantastic job of being journalists and not sports writers during that day and the days since then. And every single one of them, we owe them a debt of gratitude. But you are right, it's down to social media, it's down to videos, it's down to phones, it's down to the incredible behaviour of Liverpool fans that nobody died.
Yeah.
And not the people who were in charge of making sure that we were safe on the night.
That's the thing that always gets forgotten, because people just, I think people come to accept, like, the treatment of football fans, where it feels like again, we're seeing it with Liverpool's response to the Hillsborough chant at the weekend, and we're seeing it with like the way people are protesting what happened in Paris. It's gotten worse again. It's turned a dark corner. I think since fans have returned to football grounds, you're seeing loads more trouble, and you're seeing loads more heavy-handed policing around football games again. People just don't realise that. I know there are elements who go to the game. There's knobheads who go to football that don't go to the theatre and don't go to, you know, to other types of public events. But it gets forgotten. You should be allowed to walk up to a turnstile a minute before the game kicks off and walk in. Should be no problem with that whatsoever. That's not a fan's fault. You can get to that game whenever you want to because you've got a ticket to it. Your seat is guaranteed. It's like anything going on a plane. You've got your seat. You don't need to go and queue up for an hour before your flight leaves because your seat's going to be there regardless because you paid for the privilege of that. And that's what gets lost in the football discourse around all this stuff, and that's what hopefully things like this will help to kick up again. Is, you know, it's unacceptable to treat football fans like animals, and particularly when they are so heavily marketed at the sport, when they're so heavily charged for everything. And it's one of those weird situations where it's almost in some regards kind of good. Take my meaning on that, like, you mean, I don't really mean that, but like the dignitaries got caught up in this, the celebrities got caught up in this, all the people at UEFA actually really put these events on for actually had a shite time as well, because hopefully it's something that does kick a little bit of change into action.
Well, that raises the profile of the problem because of the names you've just said. I think you're exactly right about being able to walk up to the ground a minute before, get your ticket out, go through the turnstile. It is the perceived need to cattle herd football fans which causes the problems, because with that comes the stress. I mean, look at where they parked the van under the tunnel and forced people through a tiny little gap. People like yourself, people like you, are caught up in it. That's just really anxious time, really stressful time. People pointing guns at people, police pointing guns at people. Should not happen in a football match. We've been saying this for 30 years, 40 years, however long football hooliganism or perceived football hooliganism has been a problem, and how Liverpool Football Club were handled in Rome in particular in 84. That this all builds up to when you go to, in the 21st century, to a game in France to watch a final and you're treated like that. There's an element of people in that crowd that will get fractious and get stressed because they've been there before and they've lost people they've loved and cared about.
There's the talk, isn't there, about Hillsborough survivors who were at Paris who've killed themselves subsequently, and I don't want to say put a name or a number particularly on that because I haven't corroborated that, but that's, even if that's, you know, it feels possible, and if that's the kind of thing, I can understand.
Even if it hasn't, I know people that have spoken on Twitter about how it's brought everything back.
Yeah.
So that's all it needs, you know, isn't it, ultimately? And, you know, it was down to the fact that Hillsborough happened, that this wasn't a tragedy. I mean, no mistake about that.
Yeah.
Because of that shared learning or something, because we are Liverpool fans and we've been through that before, even though I never went through it, and, you know, and people there were young, but we all know the history of our city and of our football team and our fans unfortunately losing their lives back in 89. So thankfully it was us in that regard, because otherwise we would be talking about this as a major, major tragedy again on the world stage.
We said, I'd still take my kids to Anfield. But I was going into that, like I said this before, to my wife. We'd gone to the FA Cup semi-final, I had a boss day, it was great. And I was like, didn't give it a second thought. And like, she didn't even want to go to France again, you know what I mean, let alone go to a football, you know, football game after that. And like, I was like, I'm never taking my kids to a Champions League final, you know what I mean, if that's what it's going to be, because if that's a possibility, that's never not going to be a possibility again, because they clearly care so little. And I understand, like, there was a shortened time frame because the you know, it was taken off Russia, wasn't it, and
it was 3 months, Paul.
No, I know, but like, the idea,
all the Premier League rearrange fixtures all the fucking time. Yeah. And they're not always 3 months apart. No. And yet, when the stadium and the police are good at their jobs, and everybody in charge of managing these events are good at their jobs and understand how to do it, you can move a fixture. When did we play Manchester United the other year when it got called off?
Yeah.
When did we play them again? What day was it, do you remember? Do you remember when they had the problems and the game got called off?
It was at least 3 weeks, wasn't it? Maybe four.
Liverpool, Manchester United.
Yeah.
It wasn't 3 months. Yeah. You had 3 months. That's enough fucking time to organise one game of football, by the way.
And again, I'm not, there's no I can't be asked to go devil's advocate and all. And again, I'm appreciative of the logistics of a Champions League final, of bringing two whole fan bases into a different city and all the shit that goes around in fan parks and all that kind of stuff. But again, the French police were shite, and the way they're the wrong people to be handling that, because they don't have, in Paris, they don't have a good relationship with football fans, and they don't treat football fans right anyway. So that's a huge part and parcel of it. And again, the logistical organisation of it, that stadium wasn't fit for purpose, the location wasn't fit for purpose, the planning that went around it was not fit for purpose. And I don't trust UEFA not to make that mistake again, because ultimately they don't care. It's the same way that the Tories don't care that people can't afford the gas and lechy bills, because they can and they're fine.
Yeah,
and they'll chop her in and out of this, and you know what I mean. And it doesn't touch them enough to be an issue. As long as the money is pouring into the bank accounts, then laughing, there's an equation being done there, and it's like, well, how much is this going to cost us? Oh well, it's not touching our bottom line, so who gives a shit? We'll do it again, pricks. Right, yes, yeah, there is a point actually. Liverpool put a web link up through Liverpool Foundation saying Liverpool Football Club's working with a number of expert mental health organisations to offer urgent support to fans following the events at the Champions League final, and obviously after seeing the panorama, if anyone's affected by that, further advice and support, we'll put the link in the description of the podcast if people want to get involved. But they're saying contact your GP or the NHS in Liverpool. You can get in touch with Talk Liverpool on 0151 228 2300, and if you're in Holton, it's the Think Wellbeing. I think Wellbeing in Knowsley as well, and there's a bunch of other things as well there. So yeah, if you're having trouble, I know a lot of people will have been affected by it literally from being there. There's people who were there who've been, had it all been trawled up again by watching the panorama. But yeah, if you're feeling bad and you're really having a struggle with it, then yeah, Liverpool have got some people that you can talk to and some advice and stuff. So yeah, I do highly recommend that, because you know, unfortunately, these are the scars that we have to live with, and it's absolutely fucking ludicrous that we have to live with them for just being fans of a football team that gets to, you know, that gets the cup finals. So yeah, make sure you keep yourself well looked after in the aftermath of all this as well. Right, yes, sound okay. Thank you so much. Huge thank you to Scott Hawkes.
Yeah.
The living legend, who, yeah, we'll find some way to get you in the podcast title, and maybe the thumbnail if we can get that sorted. But thanks so much to Scott. That's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, send us a picture of yourself on Discord or something.
Yeah, Liam Bento has been a member for 21 months as a wonder kid. Says Scott Hawkes super chat gives me the same feeling as seeing Fabio Carvalho's potential for greatness, tingly excitement in all the right places. Love it, brilliant. Thank you to everyone who has joined us live for the podcast as well. You're great. We tend to do this at 10:30 on a Tuesday, so if you know for future, if you click subscribe on YouTube and the notification bell, you'll be notified when we do go live as well. And we're going to be doing our 500k subscriber special. Me and Chris are going to have a good old chat through some of the best and worst moments of the last 12 and a bit years on this wild journey to 500,000. That'll be on Red Men Plus if you want to see that. So yeah, thank you so much for that. One final super chat from Imran Adam. Gutted boys, you change what you do. Fan cam video. I waited outside the corner of Anfield Road.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we're kind of on a bit of a free roman thing on that because of how hairy it's been outside grounds with the way fans of late. So sincere apologies to him, but sorry, we'll see it again soon, mate. Right, yes, guys, you're all amazing. Liverpool are back to some semblance of form. Isn't that lovely? Yeah, come and join us over on Red Men Plus for the 500k special. That will be an absolute belter. And yeah, you guys are amazing. Have a boss week. Have a boss week, gents.
Yeah, I'm going to go and look at pictures of Eminem.
Being 50. Wild. Absolutely wild. Right, that's see you mad. Soon. Sarah.
Thank you so much for that. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want more Red Men in your ears, then consider signing up to redmenplus.com. You get everything that's on the website in video, and if you want it, in podcast form. From £5 a month, redmenplus.com, you get 2 free items of merchandise every single season. If you sign up as a club legend, you get 20% discount codes every single month, exclusive discounts from our partners, as well as your name in the credits and each and every Red Men Plus show.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.